The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The John Steigerwald Show, sponsored by ServiceMaster of Greater Pittsburgh. Demand the yellow van. Portions of today's program may be pre-recorded.
I remember the blue books. Mr. Bill Miller, a big guy who was also the Our Lady of Grace football coach. Is Our Lady of Grace School, known by us 8th graders as Bull Miller. He was our history teacher. He used to like to use the blue book, and that was the little book, obviously colored blue, with lined paper inside. Maybe you had them when you were a kid. I don't know, but it was used for essay tests. Our final exam for a report period might be in the blue book, and it would be two questions, something like this. Number one, list the causes of World War I. And then question two would be, list the causes of World War II. Now, keep in mind, we were in the eighth grade, 13 years old. We had no access to a computer or a cell phone. We couldn't Google anything. It had to be up there in our heads. Of course, this meant that it required you not only to know the answers, but you had to be good enough at writing to present them well enough for the bull to read. Well, in my long and not a very illustrious college career, I can remember being stunned when we were given tests with only multiple choice questions for a history exam. I remember at one of my stops just buying the Cliff Notes the night before for American History, for the American History Final. I went out and bought the Cliff Notes. I got a B. And that wouldn't have worked at Our Lady of Grace, and this was a college. If a teacher in any one of the four colleges I went to would hand out a blue book, there would be panic in the classroom, maybe some complaints about it being unfair. I was well prepared and not bothered at all by an essay test because of how I was treated in grade school. Well, many years later, when I was a well-known in town as a TV sportscaster, I was a really big deal. No, just kidding. I was asked to go along with fellow OLG alum Patty Burns, who was a really big deal, to a career day at Our Lady of Grace. She also had gone there a couple years after me. I mentioned to one of the teachers when we were there how the essay tests we had been given prepared me for college, and she said, "Oh, we don't do that anymore." I don't remember what the reason was, but that was about 30 years ago. I don't remember liking the reason she gave, but that's what she said. I bring all this up because coming up after the break, we're going to talk about what a terrible job teachers are doing now with educating kids about American history and civics, and how many teachers no longer think it's all that important. Almost half the teachers who responded to a survey said that they didn't think it was important to be knowledgeable about the American founding, the Civil War, and the Cold War. It's a great advertisement for school choice if that's what's happening in the public schools. Then in our second half hour, maybe you remember that truckers convoy up in Canada back in 2022, back in February, almost a year and a half ago, during COVID, that got a lot of attention worldwide and exposed Justin Trudeau as a tyrant and a moron. Well, we're going to talk to the woman who had a lot to do with organizing it and went to jail for it. She's written a book. Stick around.
This is a special alert to all Americans who own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles with an auto warranty about to expire or with no warranty coverage at all. Due to a decline in the economy, CarShield is announcing a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that is now available to the public to save any driver out-of-pocket expenses on future auto repairs. Call now to find out how you can pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Yes, you heard that correctly. Pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. An open phone line has been established for all drivers to call for a free quick quote. Call 800-353-2973 now. Drivers who are covered will not have to pay for covered repairs again. This protection plan is at an all-time low. Additionally, drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Call us for your free quick quote today. 800-353-2973. That's 800-353-2973. What do you have to lose? Call 800-353-2973. Again, 800-353-2973.
Hey, are you tired of not getting a good night's sleep? Well, my friend Mike Lindell has created the perfect solution. This is John Steigerwald. Mike didn't just stop at the pillow. He also created the Giza Dream bed sheets made from the world's best cotton called Giza. These sheets are ultra soft and breathable, yet extremely durable. And now for a limited time, you can get 50% off the Giza Dream sheets with prices starting as low as $29.98. These sheets come in a variety of sizes and colors and have a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Take advantage of this amazing offer. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio podcast square, and use promo code STAG at checkout. You can also find deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the MyPillow 2.0 mattress topper and MyPillow towel sets. Don't wait any longer to get the best sleep of your life. Call 800-716-8087 or go to MyPillow.com now and use promo code STAG. Remember, this sale won't last forever, so don't miss out.
My son Finn was born with congenital heart disease. He ended up spending about the first 8 months of his life in the hospital. During that time, he endured 10 surgeries, including an open heart surgery. Starlight Children's Foundation has played an important role in my family's life. For 5 weeks when he was a baby, Finn lived in a Starlight Hero wagon. You could not understand the pure joy of having him go from a hospital bed into his favorite red wagon. Starlight doesn't just give items that hospitalized kids can use to keep themselves happy, but also memories, moments, and experiences which are so needed in times like these. They allow sick kids to just be kids for a little while. The support that Starlight provides to families like mine is an integral part to creating happiness at a time when there's very little to be found. Learn more about how Starlight Children's Foundation brightens the lives of sick kids by visiting starlight.org today.
Oil investments involve a high degree of risk and actual results may vary.
Oil and natural gas keep going up as the Russia conflict escalates. Get in on the next major oil boom now and help the U.S. with your patriotic investment that can potentially pay you monthly income for up to 20 or more years. That's the sound of a producing oil well and the sound of a smart investment. If you're an SEC-accredited investor and have at least $25,000 liquid now, you can take advantage of Encore Energy's projects and a huge tax savings for this year. If you invest in oil and natural gas, you're allowed to write off nearly 100% of your investment in the first year. Goldman Sachs is projecting oil to go up to $100 a barrel, and natural gas is the fuel of the future and trading at record prices. Call 800-287-6691. Encore Energy is a major investor and experienced operator in its core area of operations. Call now and learn how to deduct 100% of your investment and create 20 or more years of potential monthly income. Call 800-287-6691. That's 800-287-6691.
The John Steigerwall Show, AM 1250, The Answer.
Well, I told you in the opening of the show about our 8th grade history teacher, Bill Miller, and how he loved the Blue Book essay tests in history. And I brought it up because of a story at City Journal written by Paul Ducanois that has some pretty pathetic news about how American kids are doing now in history and civics. Paul is president of the Palm Beach Freedom Institute, and he joins us now. Paul, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, John. How are you today?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Bright sunshine, beautiful weather, Palm Beach.
Are you in Palm Beach?
Yes, I am.
Not bad. So the headline says that the nation's report card shows the sharpest decline ever in history and civics. How sharp is it?
It's remarkably sharp. We've been measuring these statistics since 1994. It's a biannual test. We are showing rapid declines in proficiency in both history and civics. In history, eighth graders are only at 13% proficiency nationally, and in civics, it's 22%. Pretty pathetic, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, it's keeping the pace with math and reading, because they're about the same. How is it possible for 87% of the kids not to be proficient in history? And I'm guessing that it's not all that hard to be ranked proficient.
It's Not that hard at all. The main reason, we simply do not teach these subjects anymore in any systematic way. Only 7 U.S. states require civics instructions before 8th grade, and history is dying out as a subject that is taught regularly in school. Only 68% of students at the 8th grade level have had some sort of U.S. history course in their entire lives. That means one-third of them simply aren't being taught at all. You're not going to be proficient if you're never taught.
Yeah.
The other problem, John, has to do with the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
A RAND study in 2019 found that history and civics teachers, social studies teachers, if you will, simply do not care about teaching factual-based history of the United States. They don't care if it comes to civics about teaching the rights of the Constitution, the way government works. They believe largely the single largest measure of importance for them was using civics to teach people to get along with people who are unlike themselves, the diversity crap.
I'm guessing that pronouns have worked their way into that at some point.
Of course. Yeah. The whole bag of leftist garbage, this mm-hmm. DEI nonsense that has been taking over our institutions of education at every level is replacing the factually based history of our country. And also, how importantly, how our civic processes work. We simply do not teach them at all, or if we do teach them, it becomes something radically different from what it's supposed to be.
This makes, I would think it makes no sense to anybody who actually, you know, went to school at some point. And, you know, if they're older than, I don't know, 35, 40, I don't know how long this has been going on, but everybody, if you're a baby boomer like me, for example, that was a. I went to Catholic school, and as I said in my open, Mr. Miller would give us a test, and there'd be two questions on it for the final exam at the end of a report card period. Number one would be list the causes of World War I, and number two would be list the causes of World War II. That was when we were 13 years old. So what? What is on a history test now? Well, you gave the numbers. That 87% of the kids are not proficient in history, but what percentage of them don't even get a history course before the 8th grade, in an American history course?
Well, we do have a statistic on that. 32% get nothing at all. And what the other 68% get, they get from union-controlled teachers who do not believe that the factual bases of history are important to teach anymore. And the specific questions that RAND asked, what was the date of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor, you know, December 7th, 1941?
Right.
This is something they do not consider important to teach. Only 43% believe it's important to teach familiarity with periods in U.S. history like the founding, like the Civil War and Reconstruction. They simply don't believe that it is important to have a factual or any sort of basis, factually based history teaching. And in civics, it's probably even worse since most of them believe it's about getting all along.
So everybody's heard about CRT in the last few years. How does that mix with this stuff that's going on? I mean, I'd rather have them get no history than critical race theory, but what are they getting, neither or both?
In many cases, they're simply getting neither, since 32% of them
yeah. almost
a class in history at all by eighth grade. CRT teaches a very perverse version of history in which the American Project is laid out as a history of oppressed groups struggling for power with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Critical race theory is meant to subvert our narrative understanding of American history, our confidence in our institutions, and everything that we were taught to believe, you and I were taught to believe in school, that this is suspect, that the narrative itself, that the information being given is the product of white supremacy, and that it is deliberately designed to oppress minority people and people who are left out of the larger structures of power.
In your piece, and we're talking to Paul Duquesnoy, you can find the piece at city-journal.org. It says 54% of teachers identified conflict resolution as the most, quote, most important aim of civics education. with 27% naming environmental activism and 20% reducing racism as the objects of civic instruction. I can imagine the questions on a test, a civics test, asking about the three branches of government and, you know, all the stuff that we learned, and most of which bored us to death at that age, but we had to learn it. I can imagine the test questions for something like that. How do you give somebody a test that measures their ability to comprehend how to reduce racism? Is that a multiple choice as an essay? How do you do that?
Search me.
Yeah.
What I can tell you is that the factual-based test administered by the National Education Statistics Organization will not ask that. They will ask things like you said. What are the branches of government? What are separation of powers? What they're teaching in the place of this is how to be an activist, how to complain, mm-hmm. how to find fault with everything in our society, and very, 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 very atavistically appeal to people's bad feelings.
Well, the National Center for Education Statistics, which is where these numbers come from, so they ask the questions that you just mentioned, but they're asking them of people who haven't been exposed to them and would have no way of knowing the answer to them. So why wouldn't their test scores stink?
Increasingly, that's the case. They're simply not receiving any sort of instruction at all. And when they do receive instruction, they're getting it from essentially activist teachers who were trained to be ideologues in our failing university system, which produces teachers who are not engaged with material on any kind of competent level, but rather see it as an activist project. And again, that's a whole other problem. Higher education in this country is also taken over by CRT. Mm-hmm. The teaching of history, which I have a lot of experience with. I was a history professor for 15 years before I ran the Institute. That is rapidly dying. It's the number of majors has fallen by 50% in just the last decade. Because when you teach people that their country is fundamentally bad, it's a subject that they're going to avoid.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you were a history professor at the college level.
I was. I taught at Georgetown University, where I received my PhD in 2005, and then I taught at the American University in Cairo and at the American University of Beirut.
So, when did you graduate from Georgetown? Did you say Georgetown?
Yep, I got my PhD in 2005.
Okay, so it's not like you're an ancient old professor. You're relatively young.
45 years old.
Okay, and you. Where do you think that this began? You're 45, so you were in high school about 30 years ago. What were you learning in high school then compared to what they're being taught today, and how did you become interested enough in history to pursue a PhD?
I learned very factual-based and very empirically-based history in my school. I went to a private Catholic school in the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
I had advanced placement level courses in European and U.S. history. I did so much history as a high school student that when I went to college, the history major requirements, I was able to use my advanced placement courses to place out of one third of the entire required curriculum. I had superb professors of an older generation, and you know, most of them, I will say, probably were Democrats, probably mm-hmm. leaned left politically, but they were solid in what they were teaching. The change really happened, I think, in the last 10 or 12 years, once we started to get woke ideology in the classroom, once we started to see critical race theory come out of these very small subcultures of academia and into mainstream subjects. And it had a habit of self-replicating. If you look at the political leanings of professors now compared to 30 years ago, professors today are going to be overwhelmingly on the left. There's very little diversity of opinion. There's very little concern about that lack of diversity. And you have people who are simply not teaching empirical history or teaching factual-based information to our young people. At the college level, as I said, they're not teaching it to people who are aspiring to become teachers.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they're teaching woke ideology. They're teaching critical race theory. They're teaching very distorted views of our history and civics based on emotion, based on feeling, and based on what activists would regard as struggling for power in our society. They don't care about truth. They don't care about facts. All they care about is winning political power for themselves and their disenfranchised groups that they represent.
Now, you mentioned you went to a Catholic school. I said in the opening to my show that I went back to the school where, and this was a million years ago, but it was where we used to get essay questions in the eighth grade. And I mentioned to the teacher that I was talking to there, I went back for a career day, and I mentioned to the teacher, it wasn't Bill Miller, the guy who had given us those tests, but it was another teacher, and I said, yeah, I remember Mr. Miller giving us those essay tests, those blue book tests. They really helped me. I went to college, and I wasn't intimidated at all when they started passing out the blue books, and other kids would be panicking. And she said, oh, we don't do that anymore. And I forget what the reason was. Something like, I don't know if it was the students complained, it's too hard. It was a reason I thought was dumb. I know that. So if you would go back to your high school, which is only 30 years ago or so, and check out what they're doing in history, would they be teaching actual history now? I know that's a Catholic private school, but would they be teaching real history?
I would like to think so. Most of the teachers I had, I believe, have retired.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure who's replaced them or what they're like, but I would think that a school of that caliber would maintain serious standards. I have a small son of my own now. I have an 8-year-old who's just about to graduate from second grade on Friday. We're very careful looking at his curriculum and seeing what sort of things his school is doing. He goes to a private school here in Palm Beach, Florida. It's a wonderful curriculum. And one of the things I look for, and this is something I would urge all parents to look at, is their diversity, equity, and inclusion programming in the curriculum of their schools. Most of the private schools, especially the ones in the Northeast now, not so much the Catholic ones, but the more secular ones, all have it. It's required by the National Association of Independent Schools, which is the accreditation authority for private schools. I'm very proud to say my son's school has none of it. If there did, there would be a parent revolt, the likes of which have never been seen. And in the strategic plan up to the year 2026, there is no mention of it of any kind. We don't see it in his lessons, which we monitor very carefully and would immediately pull him out if there was. Another triumph, if I can talk about the Institute a little bit.
Sure.
One of the other private schools here, I won't use the name, but one of the other private schools here in Palm Beach did introduce diversity, equity, and inclusion last year. The board of parents who are running the school reacted in a very negative way. We were able to educate them about what diversity, equity, and inclusion really means and what happens to children who are exposed to it. Very proud to say that as of September 1st, when they start their new school year, it will be eliminated from that school's curriculum. Good. We need to do this one school at a time. We need to convince the administrators that they're on the losing end, that they're going to lose enrollment, that they're going to lose status, that they're going to lose money, that they're going to lose any standard they hope to preserve, and convince them that they need to get rid of it. Also, people should be talking to their state legislatures and their local representatives about getting it abolished at the local level. Here in Florida, Governor DeSantis just signed a bill that will defund diversity, equity, and inclusion in all state universities and colleges in the state of Florida. So if you're looking for a place to send your kids, Florida state institutions are absolutely fantastic. They're regularly rated the best in the country, and now they will, by law, not have diversity, equity, and inclusion anywhere.
So
in their programming.
It can be done. Finishing up here with Paul Ducanois. You can find his piece at city-journal.org, and he is the president of the Palm Beach Freedom Institute. I just have about a minute left here, Paul. So you mentioned that parents need to find out what's going on. I know you don't have the numbers for this, but just based off the top of your head, what percentage of parents do you think even know that their kids are not being taught history and civics in school?
I think it really increased during the pandemic because so much of the country was on Zoom that the parents were seeing the lessons in their homes. It's a lot easier to put this over if the parents are not there watching the curriculum. And indeed, when we look out at the different school boards, they're trying very, very hard to hide information about what they're teaching from the parents. They're telling the parents that it's none of their business, that parents don't have any knowledge. We've even had that case last year of the FBI opening a domestic terrorism tab on school board parents in Virginia because they were too inquisitive about what their children were learning. I think parents should be very active about this. They should see all curriculum materials. They should ask to sit in on their students or their children's classes at school. They should be very actively involved in seeing what their children are learning, especially in the public school environments.
Or not learning. Hey, Paul, I'm out of time. I appreciate it. People can find you at city-journal.org, president of the Palm Beach Freedom Institute, Paul DeConois. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Okay.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. House Republicans are moving toward a contempt vote against the FBI over a Biden document.
The chairman of the House Oversight Committee plans to move forward this week with holding FBI Director Christopher Wray in contempt of Congress. Kentucky Republican Representative James Comer said a more than hour-long briefing he received Monday from bureau officials about an unverified law enforcement tip against President Joe Biden does not amount to compliance with a subpoena. FBI officials came to the Capitol to brief Comer and Maryland Representative Jamie Raskin, the top Democrat on the panel. The White House called the decision by Comer to move forward with contempt another fact-free stunt intended to spread thin innuendo to try to damage the president politically and get himself media attention. Norman Hall, Washington.
The Dow is down 33 points. The NASDAQ leading 42 now. This is SRN News.
Wesley Financial Group is not a law firm.
This story is called The Ugly Truth About Timeshare. If you think you've done your family a favor by buying a timeshare, you need my help. Hello, I'm Chuck McDowell, CEO and founder of Wesley Financial Group. 10 years ago, I started helping folks cancel their timeshare, and in the process started what's now called the timeshare cancellation industry. Timeshare is the only thing that you can buy that you can't tell me how much it's going to cost or when it's going to end. When you buy a timeshare, you give them a blank check to fill out any amount they want for annual maintenance and assessment fees. The crazy thing is, this never ends. Even when you die, your family's now going to be stuck with this burden. Stop the insanity today. Call my office now. If we take you as a client, I guarantee we'll cancel your timeshare or you'll pay nothing.
Call for your free information kit. 800-626-5252. That's 800-626-5252. 800-626-5252.
AM 1250, The Answer, The Mike Gallagher Show.
He's your happy conservative warrior.
Going to Iowa and South Carolina, New Hampshire, and pressing the flesh? Not Biden. They leave him alone on the weekends because he's an aging president. There's no way he's going to run. It's impossible. Did you see the video of the guy falling down? I thought they were going to take him out on a stretcher.
Breaking news and what to make of it.
The Mike Gallagher Show, weekday mornings at 9, right before Del Walmsley at noon on AM 1250, The Answer. Enter.
The roar of our engines, the pump of our heartbeats, the pedal to our metal, the sparks that ignite us, the pistons that push us, the passions that drive us. From the feelings that move us to the places that pull us on the roads that unite us. With nearly 6,000 stores and over 17,000 auto care centers, NAPA has America's largest network of parts and care, here to keep you firing on all cylinders.
Did you know you don't spell the footwear brand Skechers with a T? That's right. It's spelled S-K-E-C-H-E-R-S. There's no T in Skechers. Whoa, wait, is that the legendary Mr. T?
What you talking about, fool? Mr. T is always in Skechers. Look, Skechers, Mr. T. Mr. T, Skechers.
I'm just saying, people often misspell Skechers and put a T in it.
Maybe they should think about changing it then, because T is always in Skechers, fool.
Sorry, Mr. T, there's no T in Skechers, only comfort.
Hey, John Steigerwald here for Johnny and Jesse Samick, my friends over at Service Master of Greater Pittsburgh. When disaster strikes your home or business, demand the yellow van. Fire, water, or mold, Service Master's technicians are trained and equipped to get you back to normal fast. Even when dealing with insurance, you have a choice who repairs and cleans up the mess. Make sure you demand the yellow van. Call Service Master of Greater Pittsburgh.
Demand the yellow van.
call Service Master.
AM 1250 and FM 92.5. The Answer. WPGP, Pittsburgh.
W223CS, Pittsburgh.
A division of Salem Media Group. Listen on the Answer mobile app, smart speakers, tune in, iHeart, or Odyssey. AM 1250, The Answer. Weather.
Partly cloudy skies expected for tonight with a low of 50. Partly sunny tomorrow, a breezy afternoon. Dense smoke will reduce visibility and lead to hazardous air quality. We'll reach a high tomorrow of 72. Tomorrow night, mainly clear and cool with a low of 47. As we reach Thursday, we'll see sunshine and patchy clouds. We'll only see a high of 69. For Friday, mostly cloudy with a passing shower, high 69. With your AccuWeather forecast, I'm Drew Shannon.
This is the John Steigerwald Show on AM 1250 and FM 92.5. The Answer.
I remember the Canadian truck convoy during the COVID hysteria back in February of 2022. Thousands of truckers showed up in Ottawa to protest Justin Trudeau trying to turn Canada into North Korea. Tamara Leash was one of the organizers of the convoy. She became a household word up there in Canada. Trudeau had her arrested. She's written a book called Hold the Line, My Story from the Heart of the Freedom Convoy, and she joins us now. Tamara, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, John. It's a pleasure.
So how did the convoy happen, and what role did you play in organizing? I think most people here, even though we're way down here in Pittsburgh, we saw the pictures. It was everywhere.
Yes, we were obviously incredibly shocked that it took off the way that it did and really went around the whole world. excuse me. In Canada, anyways, during the COVID pandemic, we faced increasingly draconian lockdowns and restrictions. And, you know, we watched our elderly people dying alone in care homes and babies being born without both parents present. And people lost their businesses, they lost their homes and their jobs. So it was just a really dark time here, and I'm sure almost everywhere else. When the Trudeau government started putting in the vaccine passport mandates, he went after federal government employees and mandated the healthcare providers, our RCMP and the military. And then when he thought he was going to mandate the truckers, they stood up and said something. And I've been politically active and a bit of an activist for a few years, and I reached out to Chris Barber. And it's all history from there. I just said, my skills are logistics, organization, and administration. You're going to need social media, and you're going to need money. How can I help you?
And then you organize it through social media. You had a, who were the main targets of the protest, first of all? I mean, obviously it was Trudeau, but what and who were the main targets of the protest?
Well, our mission was to go out and ask the government to lift the mandates so that we could get back to normal. At this time in Canada, we were facing harsher and harsher restrictions while the rest of the world was easing theirs. And so our target was essentially the government of Canada to come and listen to us and hear our concerns. You know, there's two sides to every story, and we were only getting one.
And how many truckers showed up in Ottawa?
You know, John, we tried every day to get a truck count. That was one of my jobs. I started a finance committee, obviously, when the donations started rolling in. And one of my jobs was supposed to be to get a truck count every day, and it was impossible. We had truckers coming and going and joining and leaving, and but thousands. There was thousands of trucks there. I would love to know what the final count is.
And they came from everywhere. I mean, Ottawa's in the Northeast. How far away were the trucks coming from?
They came all the way from Vancouver, from the Northwest Territories, even as far as Newfoundland.
And I think
all corners of the country. When we pulled into Ottawa on the 28th, we got in late on the 28th of January. We were 100 kilometers long. So I'm not sure what that is to transfer that over to miles, but 100 kilometers is pretty substantial.
It's about 80 miles, and so it went that far. That's how trucks lined up end to end for like 80 miles.
Yeah,
that's a spectacular scene. I do remember seeing the pictures. Do you think the numbers caught Trudeau off guard, not just Trudeau, but the entire Canadian government and that worked with such great numbers like that?
Well, not only did it catch them off guard, John, I think it scared the pants off of them. They weren't expecting a show of unity like that.
Yeah.
And even, you know, like we managed to raise $10 million twice through donations. So, and I said to our lawyer, Keith Wilson, one day, I said, you know, this isn't even about the money, because we got there with no money, we stayed with no money, and we got home with no money. But what really scared them was the statement behind the money. That is a lot of support.
And did you shut the city down?
No, we sure didn't. We definitely made things a little challenging, but we always made sure we had emergency lanes open. We were working with former law enforcement, EMS personnel, former intelligence professionals. So we had this really unusual group of professionals, that were working with us. And so we knew the routes that we had to have easy access so that an EMS could get through. We worked diligently to do that. While we were in Ottawa, the crime rate went down. The homeless were fed and looked after. There was no overdose deaths downtown by Parliament Hill where we were at. And as a matter of fact, I heard a story of a man that saved an overdose with a Naloxone kit.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember the not just the pictures, but you became, as I said, a household word up in Canada. Did you become a political prisoner? Would you qualify as a political prisoner?
Well, it's certainly suspect. I mean, the worst charge that I've been accused of is mischief, mm-hmm. which in Canada is akin to spray painting graffiti on the side of a wall.
Mm-hmm.
The Crown Prosecutor in our case, because Chris Barber and I are co-accused, our trial starts this fall, he wants 10 years in prison.
For you?
For a mischief charge, when I have no criminal record, I have no history of violence, I have nothing. I've never even been in Facebook jail before. So, I mean, you know, and you see cases, at least here in Canada every day, where these absolutely violent criminals, reoffenders, are constantly getting released, constantly. You know, murderers and rapists seem to get bail easier than I can.
Well, do you feel kind of a connection with the January 6th people here in the United States? You see people being sentenced to ridiculously long terms for practically nothing?
Yes, I sure do. You know, I have been following that as much as I possibly can. And when the government of Canada and the media here in Canada actually tried to frame the narrative that that's what we were coming to do. They used the January 6th incident in the United States as kind of a boogeyman mm-hmm. concept here when they were talking to their people, right? So I know firsthand what it's like to be accused of this stuff that, you know you didn't do it. And, it's a travesty what's happening in both of our countries.
We're talking to Tamara Leash. She's one of the organizers of the convoy, the truckers' convoy up in Canada. Her book is Hold the Line, My Story from the Heart of the Freedom Convoy. When and where were you arrested, and what were you charged with originally, and what was that experience like for you to be just hauled in?
I was prepared. I knew Chris Barber had been arrested a few hours before I was, so we were pretty sure that it was imminent. I was arrested on my way back to a hotel, and I was with Daniel Bulford, who is a former RCMP. He was actually Trudeau's security detail before he quit over the mandates, and a road captain, a couple of road captains. So we were on our way back to the hotel when the cops finally came, but we'd spent the evening up on Parliament Hill. And as a matter of fact, I'd spent the afternoon walking around with a veteran, one of our military veterans, talking to people and, you know, just meeting people. So I was okay with it. I wasn't afraid. I just felt, you know, all of us that have been involved in this, the core group really believed that, you know, we were guided and protected. And I just thought, okay, God, you have more work for me to do, and that's okay. It's thy will, not my will. And I simply spent a lot of time praying and meditating while I was in jail. And, you know, I knew it wasn't going to last forever.
How long were you in jail?
I was in jail in the winter for 18 days, and then I was rearrested last summer on an alleged breach charge.
Of your bail?
So we had my original bail was denied. I ended up doing 30 days in jail last summer.
And when we say jail, we're talking about jail here too, right? I mean, in a cell and...
It's worse than jail, actually. I was in a detention center in Ottawa. When I was arrested in the wintertime, I spent about a week in solitary confinement in I called it the dungeon. And then about a week in cell block, and then a few days in dorms with a bunch of ladies, 12 to 14 women in one room down there, or over there.
What was the, I don't know if you can put sum it up accurately, or whether this is even a fair question, but how would you describe the country's reaction to what happened to you? As I said, you became very well known. People knew you were in jail. Was it a 50-50 split? Were there people, the liberals, maybe around the cities, Toronto, Montreal, out there in Vancouver, who thought you got what you deserved? Or what was it? What was the feeling of your fellow countrymen?
Well, I get both. I've received so much support, not just from Canada, but from the United States and from countries all over the world. So I've been very blessed. But of course, it was a very polarizing event. And we just had gone through a campaign where our prime minister came right out on TV and said that we were racist and misogynist and asked if unvaccinated people should be tolerated. So, you know, there was an incredible division happening in our country, and there still is. It's very polarizing. So you're right. Actually, a gentleman I was speaking with a few weeks ago said, Tamara, he said, it's like people either love you, or wish you were dead. and it's true. So, but, you know, I've always had thick skin, John, and if anything, this is just making it a little bit thicker. Well, my dad always said, if they're picking on me, they're leaving somebody else alone.
The book is Hold the Line, My Story from the Heart of the Freedom Convoy. We're talking to Tamara Leash. So it's called My Story from the Heart of the Freedom Convoy. What's the difference maybe between the story that was told by most of the media and maybe is still being told and what actually happened?
All of it. That's all of it. The mainstream media here in Canada, along with the government, colluded and put out a false narrative. The evidence that came out of the inquiry this fall, John, actually showed that they crafted this narrative about us being terrorists and tried to frame it as a January 6th style insurrection before we even left. They were already colluding to have that printed in the papers. So, you know, that's one great thing about the book. The mainstream media painted one picture, and in my book, it's all dispelled. We have links with references. So, you know, if you don't believe what I'm saying, you can actually go to the exact article or link and look it up for yourself. It's all right there.
Hold the Line, My Story from the Heart of the Freedom Convoy. So what was the extent of the damage done to truckers and Canadian workers in general by Trudeau's overreaction and, you know, the long-lasting effects of what he did?
Well, the immediate effects, obviously, was the absolute violent takedown that our law enforcement did against peaceful protesting Canadians. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of injuries there, but I think the most hair-raising and the most frightening and the reason that this is really relevant, not just in Canada but everywhere, was the freezing of the bank accounts with no oversight, no court order, nothing. The bank, there wasn't a president of one single bank that even stood up and opposed it. As a matter of fact, one of the banks, bank president, suggested to our finance minister that she label us as terrorists so they could seize our assets.
Yeah, that was the biggie.
I mean, that's really...
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, so, you know, that's really unsettling that they can just do that. There was mothers stuck in grocery stores that couldn't buy their groceries, parents that couldn't buy medication for their kids, pay for their mortgage, pay their child support. I mean, could you imagine? It's horrific. They just did it so easily.
Yeah, that was the biggie. When that happened, people really started noticing that something was going on up there when you start freezing people's bank accounts. So what would a person do to have their bank account frozen? Donate to the wrong person, and then they find out you were donating money, and they'd say, you're not going to do that anymore?
Well, in some cases, yes. A lot of us organizers were targeted, obviously, because we were directly involved in the organization. But there was donors who contributed who also had their accounts frozen. And as a matter of fact, we have a class action lawsuit against us right now. We're being sued for $406 million from an Ontario ambulance-chasing lawyer. And, you know, oh, I just totally lost my train of thought.
Well, what were you being sued for?
We're being sued for nuisance.
For $400 million? That's a big nuisance.
Yeah, that's a lot of nuisance. Oh, yeah, that was my point. I'm sorry. So, actually, the lawyer that's looking after the civil suit against us has now tried to have the donor class added to this lawsuit, which is extremely terrifying because that means he's trying to go after people that just donated money straight to the convoy and then include them into this lawsuit.
Well, I have about a minute left here, Tamara, and I want to ask you, what happens now? When the next pandemic arrives, and has Trudeau been damaged at all enough by this that his time is running short, that they can finally get rid of him?
I certainly hope so. We need to get people out voting in large scale numbers, and you know, the big he seemed to have escaped that okay. Now we have a big issue here too with the Chinese interference scandal that's happening.
Right.
So I'm really hoping that there's an election called soon and we can move on to better and brighter days.
Well, he's trying to turn the country into North Korea, and I hope they get him out of there quickly. So, Tamara, the book, Hold the Line, My Story from the Heart of the Freedom Convoy. I hope you have good luck with the book. Hope to talk to you again. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you, John. Have a great day.
You too. Tamara Leash, and we'll be right back.
Dennis Prager here. Sue and I mean it when we say dogs are part of our family, and there's nothing like their loyal companionship. So we provide them with Rough Greens, R-U-F-F, because we want them to feel healthy and be with us as long as possible. I know Charlie Kirk feels the same way.
The Pragers and I couldn't agree more. I rely on my trusted furry friend, Mr. Briggs, who's an absolute machine, and he relies on me to provide what's best for him. Naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black has packed Rough Greens, not a dog food, but a supplement full of vitamins, minerals, digestive enzymes, and omega oils that Mr. Briggs absolutely needs and loves. Trying Rough Greens for your dog just makes sense.
Greetings, naturopathic Dr. Dennis Black here. I'm honored that the Pragers and Charlie trust their dog's health to Rough Greens. I'm so confident that Rough Greens can help your dog too that I'm offering you a free Jumpstart trial bag. Just cover the shipping. Yes, dog food is dead food, but it doesn't have to be. Go to RUFFGreens.com.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Mike Lindell with MyPillow is launching MyPillow 2.0. When Mike invented MyPillow, it had everything you could ever want in a pillow. Now, nearly 20 years later, he discovered a new technology that makes it even better. The MyPillow 2.0 has the patented adjustable fill of the original MyPillow, and now with a brand new fabric that is made with a temperature-regulating thread. The MyPillow 2.0 is the softest, smoothest, and coolest pillow you'll ever own. For my exclusive listeners, the MyPillow 2.0 is buy one, get one free with promo code STAG. MyPillow 2.0 temperature regulating technology is 100% made in the USA and comes with a 10-year warranty and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square to get the buy one, get one free offer. Just when you thought MyPillow couldn't get any better, MyPillow 2.0 gives you the best pillow ever. Enter promo code STAG or call 800-716-8087 to get your MyPillow 2.0s now.
Hi, I'm Olivia, and I'm 11. Some people my age might think water in a basement's pretty cool. Who wouldn't want an indoor swimming pool? But my dad taught me a thing or two about homes.
You mean all those times I talked about waterproofing? You were actually listening?
Absolutely. I'm like Alexa.
Okay, so how does J&D Waterproofing protect your home?
By keeping water out of the basement so it doesn't compromise the structure of your home.
And...
By not giving yucky mold and mildew a place to grow.
Pretty good.
Dad, I wasn't finished.
Oh, sorry.
And J&D Waterproofing can save you money.
Do tell.
By saving you from having to replace your basement appliances from water damage.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Got water problems? Don't cry. Call 1-800-VERY-DRY.
J&D Waterproofing. 1-800-VERY-DRY.
The John Steigerwall Show. AM 1250, The Answer.
Well, since we were talking about history a lot from the beginning of the show and then with our guest, who is a who wrote a piece for City Journal about the nation's report card showing the sharpest decline ever in history and civics, I guess I should make mention that today is the anniversary of D-Day, the invasion of Normandy, June 6, 1944. Next year will be the 80th anniversary. And I remember the 60th anniversary. I was working at KDKA-TV, and I've always had kind of a thing about history. And so we always had a lot of young college-aged interns and maybe producers who were very recently out of college. And I asked several of them on the 20th anniversary of D-Day, what was D-Day? I said, today's the 20th anniversary. You'll be pardon me? Oh, it was the 60th. Yeah, it was 20 years ago. Sorry, Mike corrected me there. Thanks, Mike. No, it was the 60th anniversary. And I said, you know, what was D-Day? What happened? And I don't know how many I asked. It was several. One knew. One got it right. They had, not only did they, I don't even think they made any good guesses. I think that was in World War, was that in the Civil War? They had no clue. And, you know, you think, well, I'm just an old guy and, you know, I shouldn't be that tough on them. But I think I knew when I was 20 years old what D-Day was. Of course, I was born a lot closer to D-Day than they were, but it's really pathetic what they're not learning in school about history. And everybody's, if you have kids or grandkids, you really need to start asking what they're learning and not learning in history class. That was a pretty enlightening discussion, I think, that we had. And I'll talk to you again tomorrow. Maybe we'll have another one about something.
The John Steigerwald Show is a production of Salem Media Group and sponsored by Service Master of Greater Pittsburgh. Demand the yellow van. 3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.